Penguin Random House Audio presents The Death of Jim Loney by James Welch. Introduction by Jim Harrison. Read for you by Daryl Dennis. Ah, to have a horse and gallop away, singing, away to someone you loved, perhaps, into the heart of all the simplicity and peace in the world. Was not that like the opportunity afforded men by life itself? Malcolm Lowry, Under the Volcano. Introduction. Recently, while rereading The Death of Jim Loney, I wanted to write or call Jim Welch in Missoula and talk about his novel, but he's dead. History has swept him away, though he has left behind his wonderful novels and poems. I actually wrote him a letter that arrived the day after he died. We live too far apart, Montana and Michigan, to become close friends, but saw each other now and then since 1970. When I hugged him in a bar 3 weeks before he died, he said of his fatal illness, "These things happen to people." A favorite sentence of mine up there with Merrill Gilfillan's, "I dreamed about that old black dog one night." Jim Welch made a very strong impression with his first two books, Riding the Earth Boy 40 and Winter in the Blood. At one point in the early 70s, I ignore the banality of dates, I was in Montana trout fishing with Tom McGuane, and we decided to take a drive in his Porsche, which wouldn't start unless he pushed it, an ambiguous fruit of his recent success. We were drinking fellows, roaring boys at the time, and I'm still surprised we have survived to this date. We intended to describe a road mandala around Montana, and perhaps our main destination, along with looking at rivers to fish, was to see the landscape from which Jim Welch had emerged. He was an exciting writer to us then, and has remained so. When we finally arrived at Bill Kitteridge's house in Missoula and met the Missoula literary gang, Welch, with his laconic twinkle, was impressed indeed that we had managed to get kicked out of two Indian bars in Browning. A difficult feat. 35 years later, everything is, of course, the same, but it looks different. I regard The Death of Jim Loney as an especially painful cone. Novels are designed to stretch the mind, not to answer literary questions. You don't understand the forest by cutting down all of the trees, the usual academic habit. You look at the forest topographically, and when, after a long time has passed, certain clues come to mind in terms of what Welch had in mind. You sense specifically what he created in the terrain of this novel. Sometimes when you are writing a novel, it is hard to fully inhabit your characters, which is necessary to creating good work. In The Death of Jim Loney, I believe Welch was imagining his life if he hadn't escaped the heavy fatality of the reservation life, or existence in the vicinity of a reservation. The fact is that historically we put Indians in these prisons without walls, and for a nascent writer, it is vitally important to escape. This is as true for Sherman Alexie, M.L. Smoker, and Louise Erdrich as it was for Jim Welch. Even the renowned Indian killer General Philip Sheridan said that a reservation is generally a worthless piece of land surrounded by scoundrels. It is hard to imagine a character in a novel so shorn of props, so deprived of our little collections of reassurances as Jim Loney. Even his dog dies early in the novel. His sister's visit from her successful career in Washington, D.C., is remote and metallic. His father is a cranky old fool in a battered house trailer, the connection between the two purely genetic rather than emotional. His sometime lover is a school teacher as shallow as a mud puddle and eager to get out of northern Montana, a beautiful and austere place, but no more reassuring than barbed wire. Jim Loney's only friend is alcohol, and he dies with a bottle in his hand. Without the bottle, he is an immaculate cipher, the kind of social mutant that our culture is producing in growing numbers. As with blacks, we started very early with Indians and made fly specks of them on our collective national map. Their resurgence in the past few decades shows us that our colonialism wasn't quite as successful as we hoped. Curiously, I see the roots of The Death of Jim Loney in The Stranger by Albert Camus. You don't directly see the signs of Welch's extreme literacy in his work, but his Missoula, Montana milieu was intensely well-read, if not intellectual. I can rattle off the names of a non-inclusive number of his friends. Bill Kittredge and Annick Smith, Jim Tate, Jim Crumley, Tom McWane, John Jackson, Francis Gefford in France, the late J.D. Reed, and Richard Hugo. And these are intensely knowledgeable people, not to speak of his wife Lois, a full professor of English with grand intellectual capacities. The style is different out west, but it was always easier to find a conversation involved in the literature of our time in Missoula than in our urban centers. I clearly recall speaking of Camus with Welch back in the 70s. The sense of alienation, a word that has lost its punch from misuse, in The Death of Jim Loney achieves preposterous dimensions. The grandeur of the landscape is imbued with the coldest malice and malevolent ghosts. The barely mentioned character of Loney's mother becomes immense in her minimalism. A couple of decades ago in Key West, I won a private detective's license in a poker game and thought of myself as an operative for a few weeks until I became frightened when I learned the malefactors I was investigating carried guns, at which I determined that I should limit my daring to my imagination. Nonetheless, my mind for a while dwelt with the larger metaphor of the criminal aspects of human behavior. When I tried to manage an overview of Welch's career, I began to think of the general lack of appreciation of his work as unjust. And then I finally considered his literary reception as a profound literary crime. It is arguable that we don't have a national literature but the work of specific regions unrelated to tradition. Of course, I'm nearly 40 years away from the academy and don't make a living inventing connections between writers. It is well established that taste is xenophobic. It is interesting to look into the relatively new social science known as human geography, which, vulgarly reduced, can be understood as why we are where we are. Any region becomes predominant, at least in its own mind. Consequently, the writers of the Southwest may ignore New York and may receive the same in kind. But then, since New York is the center of the business of publishing, it's rather natural that it presumes to carry the biggest stick in the literary sense. New York views itself as the center of the literary in the same manner of Paris and London. But then those cities are the axis for the radiating spokes in France and England in a way that is geographically impossible in the United States. I've worked these matters out in my mind well enough to talk about them without bile or afflatus. In Jim Welch's case, why should I expect parody for a possibly major American writer when the Supreme Court has never managed parody for our lowlier citizens, the blacks and Chicanos and Indians, or the poor whites for that matter? Added to the problem of Welch in remote Montana and the fact that it is difficult for readers in urban centers to extrapolate the matter, the mise-en-scène of his work is the simple fact of the Indian. Both D.H. Lawrence and William Carlos Williams describe the Indian as the monster in our national closet that our collective conscience has never dealt with. I recall a sobbing woman at a lecture I gave saying, "I can't accept what you say about our Indians as true." This is because our grotesquely sodden educational system has never taught the historical truth. Conversely, Welch became extremely popular in France because they didn't have to deal with his ghosts. They have their own with Algeria and other former colonial outposts. The fact of the matter is that writers are very minor characters in our national movie, always searching in vain for their names in the credits. And a character such as Jim Loney runs decidedly counter to culture where the pursuit of money for its own sake is presumably the most admirable. Like those other millions in the bottom quarter of our society, Loney is virtually a social mutant, as invisible to the more prosperous above him as a man in a green janitor suit. In Welch's case, there is a step further into the anonymous void because Loney is an Indian with 100 stripes against him at birth. Welch was a genius of isolation. A few years ago, I was in Marseille recovering from a frenetic week in Paris in a lovely hotel called La Petite Nice. I lay back in bed with a clear view of the Mediterranean reading Welch's The Heart Song of Charging Elk, which is set in Marseille and deals with a warrior with tuberculosis who is left behind by the buffalo.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?